there, and welcome to Open Mic here on Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers, and today we're visiting with Dr. Bernadette Barton, Director of Gender Studies and a Professor of Sociology here at Morehead State University. Thanks so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, Leanne.
You and I have talked about some of your previous books, including Stripped, which features stories from exotic dancers, more recently, Pray Away the Gay, but you have a new book launching this month called The Pornification of America, How Raunch Culture is Ruining Our Society. Tell me a little bit about the issues that this book tackles.
Yes. Well, I am just so excited that this book is releasing. It releases on March 30th, 2021. So the book explores the phenomenon called raunch culture, the pornification of our society. So that's the phenomenon where elements of the sex industry have filtered into mainstream culture, stripper shoes, porn star aesthetics, Brazilian waxes. And I date raunch culture to the mid-1990s when the internet gained more and more prominence in our lives. And internet porn started to drive trends in media programming.
It seems like it's kind of snowballed. I mean, there was a lot of objectification of women even before the internet came, but it sort of kind of pushed it right into people's face when the internet became more accessible to more people.
Yeah, so what we saw pre-internet was definitely the objectification of women in media, in magazines, in television, in movies, but there wasn't the expectation that women be sexy like a porn star and be hot. Like, there wasn't that compulsory hotness that I talk about in The Pornification of America. So, you know, we were comparing ourselves to what feminist theorists call the beauty myth. So definitely media saw illustrations of like impossibly beautiful women over the past several decades. And then you can see some examples of raunchiness in the media landscape before 1995 or so, but it wasn't the dominant ethos. It wasn't sort of the dominant expectation that women and girls be sexy and hot. And there's this narrative that's spread with it that, you know, you are lucky if you're a girl or a woman because you get to be hot, and it shows how empowered you are. So I talk about this in the book as a very Orwellian illustration of doublespeak, because it's not empowering to do something that you're forced to do. So telling girls and women that you're empowered because you get to be hot when it's the only thing you get to do is a very false and problematic message.
Right. And it's, I think it's a uniquely female experience. I don't know any women who were never personally objectified, some at a very young age. And I know that I'm not alone in my experience of being harassed or even just not being able to stop unwanted attention without going to an extreme that is then in turn taken in a very negative way. But I don't think I really talked about that until the Me Too movement. Did that kind of spur this book idea?
Oh, that's a good question. And you bring up a good point that most girls and women have experienced sexual harassment, and certainly sexual harassment predates raunch culture and pornification. No, I actually started the book before the Me Too movement. I've been thinking about these issues for the past, I don't know, 15, 20 years, because I just noticed it in the media. I'm 53, almost 54. So I saw the trend in programming change and was just really puzzled, confused, irritated, infuriated by it. But there was a moment that happened in class. So I teach gender studies, and I teach lots and lots of students, hundreds and hundreds of students I've taught over the years. And I hear their stories. And I just remember this one moment in a sex industry class I was teaching. A student, a young woman, said that she shared a story about having a hookup with a boy and lying in bed with him in the morning after, and he penetrated her without her consent. And it was only at that moment that she, in the classroom, that she realized later that that was a rape. So I thought, you know, the culture is failing young people. You know, even feminist gender studies students don't see rape. So something needs to change. So I just felt very compelled to really talk about this idea, this experience of raunch culture that is everywhere all the time that we don't talk about it. It suffers from what I call a condition of inarticulation, that we don't have the words to discuss this phenomenon, so it goes unsaid, but meanwhile it's affecting us all the time. And I just felt very passionate about describing this phenomenon as a kind of a gift and a service to young people.
I know the book does a lot of you spoke with a lot of other people in order to write this book. Tell me a little bit about who you did the interviews with.
Oh, that's a great question. I interviewed approximately 60 to 70 folks. The majority of people that I interviewed, there were more women than men, but there were definitely some men. And they were more young than old, but it did range in age from 18-year-olds all the way up to some folks in their late 70s. But most of the folks that I interviewed were Millennials and Gen Z, talking about their experiences of raunch culture, what they think about it, how it affects them, how it's shaped their lives, how they'd like to see it change.
I was reading a kind of a preview blurb about the book, and I guess I should mention that the book is currently available, although it doesn't officially launch till later this month. But I did see copies of it at our local bookstore, Coffee Tree Books, and but I read some preview about the book, and you really talk about commercials, and in that blurb, and how the things we see on television really have changed so much, and that really does perpetuate the culture.
Yes, there's definitely been. I mean, you can think about those burger commercials for Carl's Jr. and Hardee's that probably most people listening to this radio interview will remember, where a woman is eating a burger and it's like sexualized. There's this like pornographic sexuality about eating hamburgers that's just really troubling and confusing, honestly, to viewers. So yes, I do talk about that. And I'm so glad Coffee Tree Books has the book. And I'm just also excited to tell folks that I'm going to be doing a book launch on April 14th, from 4 to 5, a virtual book launch that is open to the public, and I invite everyone to attend.
In discussing this, I know, at least from the blurb, that it really talks about the picture that is painted of women and in this pornographic way, and how that has changed. In your interviews, I know that women have similar experiences, and I, as a woman myself, I understand exactly what you're talking about. When you just talked with men, I wonder how were they reacting about this particular topic?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, it depends on the man. Certainly men definitely see raunch culture. I mean, so raunch culture is invisible on the one hand because we're the fish and it's the water. But once I start talking about it and giving examples to folks, either in an interview or in the classroom, people see it and recognize it right away because it's everywhere. And for young people, it's especially in social media, in places like TikTok. So young men, boys, men negotiate toxic masculinity, which is this form of masculinity in which men are expected to be the toughest, not show emotion, get the girl at any cost. And so raunch culture really fuels toxic masculinity, all these very negative ways of being a man. So boys and men, they see raunch culture, and some of them are kind of indifferent to it, like, oh, it doesn't affect me, who cares? And some are like, oh yeah, I like seeing boobs, hurrah. But a lot of them also just say it's problematic. I mean, I interviewed a young man who was an ROTC student at Morehead State who really was frustrated with raunch culture and the male gaze, which is how media film, a lot of media is set up so that the camera operates like a heterosexual male eye panning up and down women's bodies. And you see the male gaze in lots and lots of visual programming. Anyway, this student talked about he'd recently gotten married and how frustrating it was for him to try to watch media like a movie with his new wife, because when he they would encounter the male gaze like in a in an action movie, all of a sudden there's this random scene of a woman in a shower and the camera's panning up and down her body. And he said that would cause tension with his wife because that would make her insecure and be like, why are we looking at this woman's bodies? And how come you're looking at other women's bodies? And why isn't my body good enough for you? And that dynamic that he described, a lot of young women also talked about in their interviews of feeling insecure by the bodies that they see in Ranch culture.
And I wonder, did you talk with any men for the book or after you've written the book about the book that disagreed? That were like, this is fine.
There were no, that's a good question. Nobody I interviewed, no man that I interviewed said it was fine. They could all see, oh yeah, I can see where that would be an issue. But there were a couple that didn't particularly care about it very much. So I interviewed a young man who we were talking about his Instagram account, and he pulled it up, and almost every thumbnail in his Instagram was an image of a provocative image of a woman. And he said that that's just what Instagram was with just these like sexy images of women. And I asked him if he ever got bored with it. Like, did he consider it pornography? Did he just get bored with it? And he's like, no, I don't get bored with it. You know, that's what the ladies like to do, and I'm all in kind of attitude that he had.
Interesting. So it's kind of like everyone has accepted it. And even if they feel uncomfortable being just the way it is, I mean that's the way that the chauvinism is that way. We see certain ideas that are prevalent in certain religious cultures are that way. Even if you have a problem with it, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, you bring up a really good point. That's one of the ways that patriarchy reinvents itself. It makes itself relevant for a new era and comes up with new language and new paradigms to constrain people's opportunities to critique it. And in the case of Ranch culture, if you're a woman and who says, you know, I don't like this. This bothers me. I don't want to have to be sexy. Why does she have to wear stripper shoes and a tiny skirt to go out? Somebody might very well come back at you and say, what's wrong with you? Why are you trying to slut shame women? And this is very silencing and makes it really hard to talk about it. So what I do in my book is I give readers language to talk about it, and I try to take the focus off of any one individual. You know, individuals get to pick what they do with their bodies, absolutely. So let's just keep our focus on the culture and what are the cultural messages and what do we really think about them? And how do we know we're following our own inner guidance as opposed to this cultural hegemonic trope?
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break here on Open Mic. We'll be right back after this.
Eagles always soar at Morehead State University. Women's basketball's Gabby Crawford has been placed on the all-newcomer team by the Ohio Valley Conference, becoming the eighth Eagle to earn a place on the OVC's all-newcomer team. Crawford was Morehead State's leading scorer in conference play, averaging 12.2 points and 8.7 rebounds per game. Morehead State Athletics, where Eagles always soar.
And we're back here on Open Mic here at Morehead State Public Radio. I'm your host, Leanne Akers. Today we're visiting with Dr. Bernadette Barton to talk about her new book, The Pornification of America and How Raunch Culture is Ruining Our Society. Thanks again for being here.
My pleasure.
So this book has topics that are discussed every day, and I know that you and I have a few students in common, and they actually asked me about the interview because they heard on the station that this interview was going to be happening, and they had read some of the book in class. Why do you think it's important for university students, particularly, to explore this topic?
Oh, wow. I wrote this book for them. I wrote this book for university students and for high school students and middle school students. I hope the book is not only widely taught in college classrooms, but also in high school classrooms. And the reason why it's important is because this is what they're experiencing, and they don't have enough tools to understand it and challenge it and negotiate it. And so this book is a gift to young people. I recently read this terrific book by Elizabeth Gilbert called Big Magic, and it's about creativity and ideas and how ideas sometimes have, she argues, they have a kind of consciousness that they float around and they land in people's brains until they manifest. And I feel like this book is, this idea was one of those ideas floating around that needed to come into the world. And I am the vessel for this, that young people need more help, that we're failing them, giving them abstinence only sex ed. And with this internet porn that's so violent and so sexist. So I just I this book, if young people will read it, will help them have words to talk about what they see and experience and make other choices that improve their own personal thriving.
Now, this critique of mainstream culture really focuses on the American experience, and but like you talk about social media platforms, and those are international platforms. So, do you know if other countries are having this similar experience, or is it uniquely like amplified in America?
Well, it's definitely amplified in Western culture. So that would be America, Europe, the UK, Australia. And then, of course, you can see it in places like K-pop and, in some Asian cultures. I would say the place where you don't see it would be Middle Eastern countries that are have a different ethos about sexual objectification. So cultures that are more conservative and very restrictive in how women are expected to behave, you'll see less of raunch culture. But other than that, you'll see manifestations of it all over the globe.
Now, you discuss the way some political leaders have been able to kind of ride the wave of raunch, so to speak. But this seems like a bipartisan issue. Both sides of the aisle feel it's inappropriate, maybe for different reasons. But why hasn't anything changed? Why is it continuing or even getting worse?
That's a good question. So yes, you can see raunch culture. Raunch culture is not a Democrat or Republican phenomenon. It's simply a cultural phenomenon. And actually, I have a chapter in the book on Trump and Trump as a raunch culture president, and argue that raunch culture helped elect Trump. Why hasn't raunch culture been addressed? I think it's because of capitalism. I think it's because it's profitable, and our country is one that definitely follows the profit. And not only is it a capitalist, racist, and it's like that unholy trinity of capitalism, racism, and patriarchy. And we are not good at dealing with institutional inequality. And then the folks, raunch culture also sells itself in this narrative of empowerment and free speech. So it's just a very sticky issue to deal with.
Do you think it's possible to go backward? I mean, with the raunch has gone pretty far in the last 30, 40 years. It's definitely getting worse. Can it be pulled back, or how do we change it?
I do have a chapter in the book on transforming raunch culture. And I do not advocate for censorship, but I do advocate for education and for people outgrowing raunch culture. So I think it can transform when people see it. So, first of all, you have to see that it exists. Then you have to think about it and decide what you think about it. And hopefully you think that it's problematic because it's compulsory and one-dimensional, oppressive and boring, and then reject it and be willing to talk about it. And also better sex education and better gender studies education would go a long way to helping people shake off and shed raunch culture.
And unfortunately, that's all the time we have here on Open Mic. Dr. Bernadette Barton, Director of Gender Studies and author of the new book, The Pornification of America, How Raunch Culture is Ruining Our Society. I really appreciate you spending time with us today.
Thank you. I always enjoy talking with you, Leanne.
Thanks for tuning in to Open Mic. Our show is produced by Greg Jenkins, and our theme music is Turtle in the Creek, composed by Galen Green and performed by The Wooks. Produced by Morehead State Public Radio with the generous support of listeners just like you. We'll see you next Friday.